4759 of the Fan. Ailish Forfar. Blake Murphy. JD Bunkus. Canada's number one soccer fan. I'm very pleased to talk about. I'm not even joking. I know James Sharman and I got. Go back, all right? The company, me being an annoying little producer, yipping at his heels, trying to get him to come in studio. James, come in here, James. Him being like, ugh, I've just worked a really long day, but fine, I'll come in here. And then have JD take his, like, 35 jokes about the English soccer team and about Canada soccer. And then here we are, where I'm texting my friend last night going, I really don't know how to watch other sports right now because I just have such a different care level for watching the Canadian soccer team than anything else. That the recalibration or the what's it called with scuba diving where you can't go down too fast, the pressurization, where I'm like the depressurization of going from these Canada soccer games to just regular season sports, it's not really working for me. James Sharman, Sportsnet soccer analyst and founder of Sharman's Proper Pies. How are we doing, buddy?
Good, man. Good. No bends yet, but I know what you mean.
The bang one,
right? See, what a pro. What a pro coming up with a word right away. Just bang, picking me up when I'm down. So I'll admit that yesterday I really thought that they were going to go with the A1 lineup. And then I was texting with some people saying that this was kind of a predetermined decision by John Herdman that had to do with fatigue factors with different guys. What was your read on why they decided to maybe not go all in for getting into pot three?
Yeah, well, certainly they really do, you know, buy into the sport science and load management, essentially, you know, yeah, that old phrase. You know, and they've got to nurture relationships with clubs. They don't want to return broken players. So that's a big part of it. You also want to also get some minutes for some players that made the trips and that you want to see what they're about. The big one being Ishmael Kone, the youngster. Lucas Cavallini hasn't played much either in this whole qualifying process. So there's that. And let's be honest, you know, preparation for this game wasn't ideal given that they were just celebrating and partying. Sure they're professional, but I mean, if you look at what happened post-match, you know, then hanging out with Drake, going to the Raptors game, you know, usually they wouldn't be doing this kind of stuff, right? No. So I just think it wasn't the ideal situation, obviously. And they qualified. Pot three, pot four in the draw, it meant something, but not a huge thing. And they had lost that game. If they were entering this game, guys, you know, unbeaten, then it would have been a different story, I think, because they did want to finish unbeaten. That was one of their preset goals. Mm-hmm. But they'd already lost to Costa Rica, and it wasn't that enormous a game result as perhaps some people made out.
And listen, I'm not going to ever try to equate myself to a professional athlete, especially like a soccer player who runs. Like, I don't know how it's like, how often are soccer players running more often in a day than not? It feels like at least it would be close. But the hangover effect definitely dawned on me when you go from a game where it's freezing cold outside to partying for 2 days to seeing Osorio be interviewed at the Raptors game where he's going, yeah, I think I've slept for 10 minutes. And you go, oh, right. And then you show up and you're in Panama and it's sweltering hot and you're seeing these guys sweating. And I'm going, boy, that's not the easiest thing to do. So, yeah, all of that stuff makes sense. And it also makes sense considering that one of the things we've talked about with this team, right, is that they're deep and that they have a bunch of different guys who can play. And it wasn't exactly like they threw out a lineup of scrubs. They still ended up having a push at the end. It was ultimately a pretty decent lineup. But, yeah, so maybe you could explain to us what you think the difference is going to be with pot three and four, because our audience now understands that we have explained the differences in terms of how it operates. But what are we talking about in terms of difference of quality of competition here? Like, what was it actually that big of a swing? Because I was treating it like that when I was watching the beginning of the game.
No, you know, I don't think it is, really. I mean, if you look at the last World Cup, only one team from pot four actually got out into the knockout phase, right? So maybe there's something to it, but pot three has Senegal, Iran, Japan, Morocco, Serbia, Poland, South Korea, Tunisia, right? There isn't a world power there, right? There's some good teams, don't get me wrong. Serbia's a good team. Poland's a good team. Whereas pot four, Cameroon, they're a good team. Ecuador's an excellent team. Ghana's always dangerous. Saudi Arabia, you know? So, yeah. You'd have a slight advantage, but it's not that big a deal. And seeing how social media melted down last night, the prospect of slipping to pot four, people need to give themselves a bit of a slap in the face here and realize, hey, we're at the World Cup. You know, a year ago, if you said they would be arguing about what pot the team's in, you know, I think we would have lost it. So it isn't that big a deal. You know, the quality teams are in pots one and two. And, you know, sure, every World Cup, one team from, say, pot three makes a bit of noise, but it's not that regular.
I know that you mentioned that part of this is, hey, get a look at some of the guys and spread those starts around. I'm curious your take on the Ishmael Kone thing in particular. Obviously, he's an exciting guy here and has a bright future ahead of him. And they play him and Atiba Hutchinson. And Atiba didn't start the game before. You know, there's part of that is probably, yeah, continue to pad the Caps record. But do you, like, do we see in soccer at this level in a game like that, like Atiba's out there to help Kone and like there's the veteran, you know, you kind of pair your rookie with your veteran to make sure he's in the right spots and he's learning over the course of the game?
I don't think so. I mean, Stefan Astakio was out there and he'll be the guy talking more, I think, to Kone in that particular position. And Atiba was playing at the center back position once again, right? And he's not really a center back. He does a fine job there, but he's a midfielder. That's what he's played his trade for, you know, his entire two-decade career. I think really it's just seeing what you've got with Kone, get him out there, expose him to this kind of football in CONCACAF and see what happens. I mean, the kid's got essentially 8 games of high-quality football behind him. Just 8 games, right? And, you know, he didn't play great in that first half, gave the ball away a lot. He took a knock at one point, but he was taken up at half-time. And generally speaking, if you're subbed at half-time, it's because things aren't working very well for you. So I'm sure it's a big learning experience for him, invaluable, probably. And he's going to be just fine moving forward. I think he'll be a star for this team eventually. But I don't think that's why they played Atiba. You know, you do need experience in these kind of games in Panama. You know, it's going to be physical. They're going to try and smash your, you know, how you play the game, your tactic, your strategy. So, you know, you always get Atiba in there when you can. But it's, I guess, to a certain degree, it is a bit of the passing of the torch, you know, in that Atiba is that central midfielder. Kone can play that position as well. It was interesting, I'll say that. Interesting to see him out there. I'm glad he got the minutes. I'm glad he got exposed to that kind of football, but it wasn't a great debut. But that's okay. He's a teenager, tough game, tough environment, and tough situation.
So you said it. I think you said the thing that everyone has kind of come back down to earth on today, which is, hey, they're in the World Cup. We're going to watch them be a part of a draw. We're going to actually spend time looking at how they shake up against other teams. And this program is going to have these real measuring stick moments, like something that a lot of people, like that's basically the way that all these things have been frameworked is, you know, we spoke to Atiba Hutchinson the other day and he's going, yeah, I'll be honest. There were times where this program was clowned on. Like I made a joke with him that some of the clubs that he's played on, when they'd say like, you play in Canada, like they have a team. I wasn't really aware. What's the thing that you've kind of been reflecting on? Because now we've had a couple of days here, and I know that we were looking at this matchup and what the lineups were, but then when this thing's all said and done, and now that pot 3-4, all this discussion is kind of moving past, is there something that's kind of just been sticking with you about this team, about this program, about these fans, about this moment, that, yeah, you just keep finding yourself reflecting on, James?
I think it's just, you know, that the future now is exciting as far as that this team will be qualifying for World Cups moving forward. There's going to be, I really don't see for a long, long time, unless something goes really horribly wrong, I don't see us back in the world where, oh, it's been another awful CONCACAF date and there's going to be a failure to qualify for a World Cup. Because they've expanded to 48 teams, there's going to be 6 to 8 CONCACAF berths at World Cups. This team's going to be qualifying moving forward, which gives it a real relevancy in world football. I'm now looking forward to friendlies. I mean, friendlies are awful football games, generally speaking, but now we're going to be seeing Canada play some pretty good sides. There's only a couple of windows heading into the World Cup break in November. So maybe 4 games, maybe 5 games, but they'll be against good teams now, really good teams. Canada now is a destination, not just for players, but for other countries to try and, you know, play them and see where they're at. These are CONCACAF's best, you know, and we haven't said that for a very, very long time. Even in 2000, when Canada won the Gold Cup, you know, they weren't really CONCACAF's best. They managed it. They did a great job. But following that, it was a really, you know, I think 1 goal in 6 games or something ridiculous post and didn't build on it. But it's all about this gathering wave now that they can move on now, moving forward. And from a personal level to a club level to a national level, Canada's finally on the football map, which they haven't been on before.
So Canada's on the football map, and we're saying they might be, you know, soccer. Canada's a soccer country. So when we look at the World Cup, and now that they've qualified, and that's a big accomplishment in its own, what would you say is a successful World Cup for Canada? Is it, you know, obviously more than just getting your first ever World Cup goal, but is it defeating a team? Is it, you know, being able to advance? Like, what is a realistic, successful World Cup for Team Canada?
You know, it really depends on the draw, right? I mean, they could be in a group of death, in which case, just get through it. You know, they're at a World Cup. This is a beginning. That's fantastic. But what if they're in a weaker group? This team's shown they can hurt some pretty good sides. And the way they play, they're comfortable sitting back and attacking on the break, where you can burn teams and get that all-important goal. So for me, it's just put a good performance in. I know John Herdman will be telling the guys right now, I'm sure last night was saying, listen, we can make noise at the World Cup. We can be that Cameroon 1990. We can become the darlings of the world football and maybe get into a knockout game. It is very possible they can. But for me, it's just get there, do yourself proud, don't get blown out, you know, and just build from there. And maybe that's, you know, too conservative an approach, but it already all depends on what the draw is like, because if you get Qatar in that hot one, you're really happy, right? But you might get Brazil or England.
Maybe.
And then you might get Germany, right? So it all depends on tomorrow. Tomorrow is so exciting, but it's also so important as far as the expectations for this World Cup.
I can't wait. And yeah, it's funny. It's like the Qatar draw thing feels like when you're in a draft lottery with an NBA team like the Raptors this past offseason, where they end up with Scottie Barnes, and I'm just sitting there like, can't wait for the draft lottery. Qatar, you know, I don't know how they reveal this thing, but I am just, it's my entire hope and dream, right? Is just please let me get that. Do you think that Sportsnet is going to send both you and I to Qatar? Like, you think I'm in now? Like, do you think after... Probably, or what?
You didn't get the call. I assume that's what's happening, JD. I mean, why wouldn't they send you and I? I mean, geez, what could go wrong there?
I figure it's a lock. Someone told me, though, that Qatar, the bar situation is a little shady. Like, there was only one bar at a hotel, like, that you have to go to. And I got to tell you, I don't know if you saw the video of me at the last game, but I'm not as professional as you, let's just say. Like, I need a little bit of a calm-me-down beverage for these games. Yeah, just a little touch.
It is true. Qatar does seem to frown on alcohol, but... when you're welcoming, you know, 10,000 English fans, you may have an issue in your ass. I would have pleased them. It may not be as obvious and as visible as other World Cups, but don't worry, JD. If you're going to be there, and if I'm going to be there, we'll find a way. There's always a way.
Yeah, come on. Honestly, I'm not even joking. I want to go to it so badly. I just think that maybe I'll wait for my first World Cup to be somewhere like here. Like North America, where it's coming right after. But hey, if Sportsnet wants to send me, I'm very down. I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm ready to bother you. Like, honest to God, where would that rank in terms of your nightmare, seeing my name on a list of people that were in your traveling party to go to the World Cup? Like, is that...
I never thought I would ever decline an invite to a World Cup. that might be it. Yeah.
Listen, and you know I'm not putting the shirt on in Qatar. Like, you know I'm rocking no tarp the entire time in Qatar. That's 100%. James Sharman, Sharman's Proper Pies, of course, delicious. Order one anytime. And, of course, analyst for Sportsnet, soccer analyst, one of the absolute best. It's been great having you along with this journey, buddy, and I can't wait to talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's just beginning. It's going to be a lot of fun. Cheers. Oh,
so great. James Sharman. So, yeah. Was there... Hey, let's just put... you want to read what you just put in the...
Yeah, I just looked up the Qatar rules, like the government rules.
Yeah, it doesn't First seem like all, my kind of place.
No, it says... Alcohol, it is an offense to drink alcohol or be drunk in public. You could be detained under the law. You could be charged and also put into jail for 6 months. And then I scroll down to dress code, and it says you should dress modestly while in public. Women should cover their shoulders. Both men and women are advised not to wear shorts or sleeveless tops. Dressing modest is important, especially during the holy months of Ramadan. There's a lot of rules that clearly don't allow your type of lifestyle, JD, so I'm a little worried that you won't be invited.
I think you're fine on the Ramadan front. It starts tomorrow, so you're all
so
clear
don't
in
head
November,
over there now.
JD.
How
also, there's a zero tolerance for drugs. Zero tolerance for drugs, so... just so you know.
That's a you guys problem more than it is a me problem, you little druggies. Old Blake showing up at the office.
Little druggies.
Yes, yeah, you little druggies. Little How druggies. Do you guys think I would do in Qatar prison? You think I would do all right?
Hang on. I'm curious here. Ailish was the one putting you on blast with it. How did we turn to me? You throw me under the bus for showing up to work with drugs. Where did that come from?
Yes, because
you just start snitching on anyone anyone you can see.
No, you and Ennis, where you guys had that awkward exchange about
doing
drugs
together.
That was
about how I don't do and have drugs.
Guys, I don't know.
Look, people are asking a lot of questions about my I'm not on drugs shirt that are already answered by my shirt. You don't need
You know
to...
that I am a former professional athlete and my body is a temple and I've never touched an illegal substance or a legal substance in my life. Mm-hmm.
I don't think after reading that Sportsnet will be considering me for Qatar. I thought maybe, you know, I had an outside chance at them saying, hey, go make some content for us down in Qatar.
Oh,
go have some fun.
That'll be fun.
After reading the lists, gonna say no. Someone in the text line offered to pay for my travel to Qatar, but only if it's a one-way trip. Oh, that's good.
That's good.
Especially since Daniele put that in our chat, and I read that. Like, I was all excited, and then it's like, oh, yeah, okay, someone who hates
But you
me,
don't get
thanks.
To come back.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. Well, listen, I'm not getting out of jail if I go there, so that's going to be an issue. Unbelievable guest. Breaking on time.
It's going to be a... awesome guest.
It is going to be a awesome guest. Drive to Survive has obviously occupied an incredible amount of our time. We talk about it off air, on air. We all of a sudden care deeply about F1. But I am curious about what the future of the sport looks like in the Americas if Haas Racing can continue on a path of having success under these new rules and guidelines. And so let's ask our next guest about it. And also, you know, about his legendary swearing abilities. it's Günther Steiner, team principal for Haas, the F1 team. Unbelievable! That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
JD Blake and Ennis. And if you follow us on Instagram, then you know Ailish threw me under the bus. And then we also have one of the biggest guests that our show has ever had. In about 5 minutes, Günther Steiner, team principal for Haas, F1 Racing. So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you guys about quickly before we grab him, before we bring him on, is just the idea of allegiances with this sport, right? Because I am kind of curious about what the longevity is going to look like, right? Like, the drivers are so interesting, and then we have the series. And I find myself, one of the things I love about F1 is that I kind of cheer for everybody, right? Like, there's no person that I actively root against, and I feel like anybody who wins, I go, that's a really cool story. I'm loving the emergence of Ferrari this year, Max continued success as the world's best driver, the preeminent driver. Haas is back up in the mix. The sport has new rules in terms of spending money that is going to change the outlook of how it is competitive. But as this thing sort of flattens out, right, because you really feel like you root for one team or those stories of success when it feels like there's such a disparity, right, where the teams at the back can't win and blah, 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 blah. But as we move forward here and maybe there's a little bit more parity in the sport, do you find that there's going to be something you think attracts you to one of the teams? Do you feel already attracted to one of the teams? Because, again, I think we would all agree that outside of Mazepin, we all love basically all of the drivers.
Yeah, I think that, for me, is the most exciting part about being a new fan and being a fan that kind of learned about F1 and has been learning about F1 through this Drive to Survive series. And I think that I enjoy the storylines and knowing about the athletes and knowing what goes into becoming one of these, you know, all-star drivers. And that's what's attracted me so much to being able to kind of like a bunch of different teams. I haven't gotten to the point yet, at least personally, where I'm like all gung-ho on one team. And I think that that's exciting because in most sports, that's how I am as a fan, you know, Raptors, mm-hmm. Leafs, Jays, and I care about them and their success. And I'm hyper-focused on one team. And I think the best thing about F1 is that I can have a couple favorites and I feel comfortable in this type of environment where people allow for that type of fan base. You know, I don't feel like it's, you must like Mercedes or, you know, that's it. I love the environment of being a new F1 fan. I think it's been exciting to have multiple teams that I cheer for. And as you said, the storylines are what gets you as a fan. And it's been really incredible to watch this over the last two seasons, at least for me.
For me personally, it's similar, Eilish. And JD, I know you tease me about like how in basketball, you know, I think every player is cool or fun, or there's cool, fun, there's just the guy, and there's I don't mention you, which, and the I don't mention you is saved for like nine guys in the NBA each season.
I do think
that what that says about me is that, yes, obviously I'm going to be Toronto team centric, but especially in basketball and a little bit in baseball, I've kind of shifted more towards, you know, I don't have a second team, really. I cover the whole league, and I'm more player-oriented, right? Like, it's players that I want to see have success. It's players I'm tuning in for. So right now, at least, in my novice F1 fandom, it's individuals driving it. Like, I was so disappointed last weekend when Yuki's car breaks down. I'm like, I don't get to see. This was the guy that I became a fan of during this season of Drive to Survive, and he misses the second race. I do think, however, and this is something I want to ask Gunther about, I'm starting to learn as I read more and see more tweets during the live events and stuff, there are some different strategic approaches. And I think that that could eventually be something that draws me to a team over a racer. And Haas is a good example that we can get into that with Gunther later. But I do think, yeah, if this is something I stick with for a couple seasons, I could see it going to a team focus, or at least a team that I prefer to others.
I'm wondering if it is, because traditionally I've always needed a team in a sport, right? Like, I root for a team, because the individuals change, right? Over time, the individuals change, and so eventually you end up having a team. But if you look at the way that a lot of kids root for sports now, or younger people root for teams, it's like you pick an individual, right? Like, they're Steph Curry fans, or they were LeBron fans, and now you're going to probably see Ja Morant fans. And I do wonder if F1 is going to have a little bit of that element, right? Because it's a little difficult to cheer for a team if the driver is not someone compelling now, or someone interesting, or if they're just, you know, kind of a flat out jerk, like, you know, Mazepin might have been, where it was like, how are you supposed to cheer for Haas, even if that's your team, if there's someone that you look at and go, damn, this dude is really tough? So I'm not sure yet. But all I will say is that I am definitely gravitating towards Haas, and I have. And I've outlined my reasons. I feel like a connection to that team, unlike the ones that I have to others. And our next guest is a reason for that. Very excited to be joined by Gunther Steiner, team principal for Haas F1 Racing. Good morning. How's it going?
Good morning. It's going good here. Thank you very much for asking. How are you?
I'm doing great. I've got to tell you, though, you're also a star of Drive to Survive. It's the way that all three of us have gotten deeply embedded into the sport, into knowing you. But it tells you something about me that I watch your guys' sport, and I don't get anxiety watching you guys drive race cars at this speed. But seeing your scene of you up on that mountain send me into a tailspin.
I hope you liked it. You know, I had a good few days out there doing it. You know, I really enjoyed that one. Yeah, last summer.
Yeah, it was beautiful, but yes, that's not for me. I credit the brave camera crew that decided to come with you guys. It was really, really awesome. So yeah, this F1 series has been just a phenom. It's been massive. And I know in your orbit, like, you're a guy who's been in F1 now for 20 years, that I am just curious from your vantage point of, you're with this team that is a new team. And then all of a sudden there's this new audience, and a lot of the audience is North American, and there are people like me who come in and just say, hey, I don't know a lot about this. And we learn through the sport, and we learn through you. And I wonder, with all these different things that you have to balance, Gunther, which is like, you know, you see it throughout the show that it's not just your responsibilities as the team principal, it's your responsibilities with sponsors and drivers and the car, how you also think about things like marketing the team and bringing in new fans with a new audience.
I think bringing in the new audience, if you go, for example, to Drive to Survive, that actually it's not worked for me, because what they do, they just cover the day how we do it. There is nothing, nothing I need to do special for it. You know, I just do my job and people film me, and I apparently they do a good job, because as you may know, I didn't watch any of these things for that reason, because in the end, if I see myself, maybe I would be embarrassed about how I conduct myself, and I would try to change. And then you put on a show, and as I always say, I'm not an actor. I like to do my job, which is running an F1 team. I enjoy that. I think I've got quite a bit of experience in motorsport, so that is what I enjoy. And the rest, what is coming out for the audience, which I think it's great, because they get the reality of what we are doing. It's not like a scripted show or anything, you know. They just film us what we are doing, and then they make a series out of it, and apparently people like it, and that's fantastic, because then these people are getting attracted to the sport and watch the sport, because they get an understanding of how many things are ongoing in this sport, you know, how complex this Formula One thing is. It's not only 20 race cars going around in a circle. It's a lot of politics, a lot of dramas, a lot of personal issues and things like this going on. So I think it's good for everybody in the end.
You are, and it's incredible, because I'm so opposite. If I'm filmed, I have to see me, right? Like, I have to know what I look like. I got to know, hey, did I come off well? I think that's an interesting perspective, that you wouldn't look at yourself and through this lens. You are, I'm sure, at least aware, the number one quote, though. Like, you're the guy who everyone gets all excited about the quotes. And so it is good to know that all of that is unscripted. All of that is off the cuff. This isn't like a stand-up comedian where now you're writing material and coming up with some of these things. And yeah, you're right. So many fans have come into this through all of the different complex natures of it. But yeah, the role that you have is such a complex one. I wonder, did you ever feel like at any time when this series was coming in that it was going to complicate things? Does it actually make your job harder in any way?
No, the series didn't make it any harder. Obviously, I think it's we created, because the last two seasons for Haas F1, they were not good, I mean, to say the least. But still, people are interested in us, because of the show, and you get a little bit more requests for interviews and things like this. But otherwise, it didn't make the job any more difficult. As I said before, I just try to do a good job with the team, try to compete, try to go out there and be competitive. That is what we as a team try to do, and not only me myself, because on my own I couldn't do any of this. So it's the good thing for me, it has gotten people which were not interested in F1 interested in, you know, which is great to see, because we are racing for the fans, because the day we race only for ourselves, that will be a short-lived career.
Gunther, you mentioned that the last 2 years hadn't been super kind to Haas, but from what it sounds like is you guys kind of spent last year and maybe 2020 building toward this year. The focus was on the 2022 car. You guys have started out really well, 12 points already in the constructor standings, sitting in fifth right now. That's more points in the constructors than you've had since 2019 already through two races. How vindicated do you feel in that strategy where, you know, you guys played it patient and even with Drive to Survive going on and more eyeballs, you know, you guys took the approach of, no, we'll wait for 2022 and we'll wait until we can roll out a really competitive car.
Yeah, because when in 19, our car was not competitive, and then 20, the pandemic hit and we mothballed the development of everything. And then when Mr. Haas decided that he wants to stay in F1 for 21, I came up with a plan and said, Gene, you know, for 21 will be a tough year because we haven't developed anything. And I'm doing this a long time, motorsport. So, you know, if you don't put the same effort or more in than the other teams, why would you be competitive? You know, we are not this much smarter, you know. So it's just hard work all the time. So I said, and I came up with the plan to stop developing the 21 car and focus on 22. Gene Haas said, yeah, if you think that's the right thing to do, let's do that one. He was very supportive, and I really appreciate that from him. And then obviously 21 came, and it was a tough year because everybody was like, oh, Haas never comes back. They're going even more backward now. But we had a plan in place. And obviously now that you can see that the plan worked. It's easy to say, yeah, I knew this. I mean, last year, sometimes it was difficult. People, the doubters were more than the believers. I can tell you that much, you know. So, but in the end, when you come back, like we came back, you say, I wouldn't say vindicate. I just like, I prove us right. I mean, it was the same when we came into the sport because we are the newest F1 team in 2016. And we are doing things a little bit different. You know, we have got three different locations where the team is based. We worked close with Ferrari together. People said, oh, these guys can never have success. We got points in our first race, you know. Again, it's as I always say, the doubters are always a lot louder than the believers. So, but in the end, we don't get distracted by that. We keep our head low and just work and do our best. And normally it works out. And up to now, it has worked out twice. So hopefully we can keep it going now. We don't have a setback like we had in 2020.
Well, yeah, and the doubters can always fuel and motivate, which can always end up working for a team. And part of the reason, though, right, is this up and down, this roller coaster for you guys over the last couple of years has been, yes, you came out and it was very much, yeah, that rock star beginning. And then these last couple of seasons have been marred by difficulties with sponsorship dollars, right? It's either somebody pulling out or maybe a sponsor that ends up trying to have a little bit too much control. Do you feel like, how important is the foothold in America? Because we are seeing the sport expand. We're now seeing races come into North America. There's going to be another one in Las Vegas. But creating a foothold for you guys in this market now where you can kind of take advantage of having that as a base, that the Haas name does resonate in the United States. And do you feel like you are now moving into a place where you are going to feel more secure when it comes to sponsorship dollars moving forward?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the interest, as you say, it's very, very big with the announcement of the Las Vegas race yesterday for next year. That's the next step for North America. I mean, we have got also the race in Canada. So North America is quite covered now, I would say. We have got a lot of interest in the moment from the sponsors. We were never, people always thought of, we are not surviving. It's not an issue. It's just we want to survive as a business, you know, having like doing racing as a business. And therefore, we always have to find sponsors. But we are never in doubt when Mr. Haas decided in 20 to continue with this one about our finances. We want to be efficient in whatever we are doing. And as I said, we have got quite a good interest now in sponsorship. And as you mentioned before, our roller coaster with sponsors was quite dramatic over the last year. So we just want to make the right decisions. But it is the market is getting a lot better, obviously, because of the interest created in the United States as well.
Yeah, I also wonder with those sponsorships, if you guys just feel a little bit more drama-free this year. Like for you, how potentially, especially for you, how it just might feel like, hey, there's a weight off your shoulders. You are reunited with a driver that you had familiarity with, that you had a lot of success with, and Kevin Magnussen. And yeah, we all saw the series. We know how it went with Mazepin. We saw how controlling like the family was over top of the duties that you already had. And I do wonder for you guys as a group, if you just feel a little bit freed up and a little bit more comfortable in your shoes and you can just sort of focus on racing in the day-to-day rather than some of the drama that seemed to be circulating your team.
Yes, it is very good now with having Kevin back and a competitive car. That's the most important thing in racing. One thing I wouldn't jump to, that we don't have any drama anymore, because I think we attract drama, not that we want okay. that, but it's always coming our way, you know. So yeah. I don't know what we are doing wrong, but drama is always with Haas F1. But, you know, in the end, some things, the dramas, they ended up to put us in a better place. So you just have to work through it. But in the moment, as a team, we are in a good place. All the things you mentioned, you know, it's just like, but the most important thing is the car is competitive this year.
So you mentioned the drama. Well, give us a little sneak peek of what we might know next season on the Drive to Survive. What's going on right now in terms of drama?
Hopefully nothing, you know. But as I said, I would never sign on to that one. There will be no drama with Haas F1 because at some stage it will hit us. I mean, we had already quite good dramas this year already with the title sponsor, which obviously with Russia invading Ukraine, then had to change driver, then the big accident last weekend with Mick in qualifying, you know. It keeps on coming. It's a gift which keeps giving, you know.
So. Yeah. Well, especially last week, you know, you guys are at a race and there are bombs going off. Like, can you kind of share what the experience was like where you're being told, okay, let's go do our jobs, and now we're essentially like a few minutes from an active bomb site?
Yeah, I almost forgot about that one already because it was such a small thing in our drama world that you forget. No, it was like it was very well managed from the Saudi authorities. I must say they gave us good understanding what is happening with these missiles, drones, whatever we want to call them, because I don't know exactly what it was of the two, we were reassured that they have got systems in place to control that this cannot happen in areas where there are people. You know, it was outside things they don't survey, where it's just infrastructure in place and never anybody got hurt, any individual. So obviously it is, I would say, scary if 10 miles down the road there is a missile strike going on. But they reassured us that nothing happened, and they were right. You know, they try really hard to develop the country, to bring it up to Western standards. They really work hard at it, and I think it will take some time to get there, but they're on the right track. So therefore we decided to stay there for the race, because I always was, once they told us what they are doing and what is in place, that we are not getting hurt or harmed, I was very, I felt very secure.
So there's something that we are always curious about on the show, and it's like developing drivers, right, within an organization, within a team. And you have Mick Schumacher, who is 23 years old, obviously has the family pedigree. You've got Kevin Magnussen, who you reunite with, again, a more veteran driver, 29 years old. Last year, you guys were very young in the car. You are obviously trying to win. You're obviously trying to maximize points every single week. But what does it look like with a team like yours, where you balance a little bit of, we're trying to improve a driver, we're trying to grow a driver, we're trying to develop a driver and teach them new things and try to optimize their potential in a sport where points matter so much that it equates to dollars, which equates to your car?
Yeah, it's a fine line, as you say. I mean, you figured that one out pretty quick, you know. It's a fine line. The thing is, with drivers developing, last year, I think what I learned, having two rookie drivers, is very difficult to know where they are at, because you have no reference. And having a reference, you then can see where you have to develop the driver, and that is what we did this year with having Kevin back. He's a good reference. We know what he can do in a car, because he was with us 4 years. We've got a good understanding. He was in the team with Romain Grosjean, which is also a very experienced driver in F1. So we know exactly where we are at, and that is what we have to do now with Mick. And I think for Mick, this is a big opportunity and advantage compared to last year, to have a reference, because he can go and look, how is Kevin approaching the race weekend? How is Kevin driving the car? How is Kevin working on his setup when he has problems? You know, because Mick can obviously see the data, the car data from Kevin, the GPS data from Kevin, which line is Kevin taking on the racetrack, because he can see this all on data. So I think it's a good opportunity for Mick, and out of that one, then we can evaluate how strong is Mick after a certain period of time of learning, you know, and then make our future decisions. So I think for us that we got a little bit, we lucked into that one, that we now have experienced, even if Kevin is still a young driver, he's 29, but he's experienced. So we know now who we have got there and have a reference for the team and for Mick.
So it's interesting as a new F1 fan like us, because you're trying to figure out if you're a fan of a team or a fan of a person, and if you're a fan of a team that's winning or about their personality. So how do you think that fans of Haas become fans? Is it because of your personality? Is it because of you, especially being such an all-star on the new Drive to Survive? And how do you want to connect with new fans that are getting into F1 racing now?
For me personally, the best would be if the fans connect because we win the world championship. But I think we've got some work to do there. So, no, I think it's a little bit mixed. Some people, and you guys know, the underdog is always liked. You know, we are a small team. You know, as we said before, we create some drama. Or not, we don't create drama. Drama finds us, put it this way, because I don't want to create any drama, because it comes towards us. you don't need that one. So, there's always something we do. And it's just like, I think people is mixed. I know a lot of people are now happy that we are competitive, because it's this underdog thing again. But I think it's just like, to answer, I think it's a mix. Some people like who we are, some people like our results, some people like we are the youngest team, the newest team in Formula One, and we punch above our weight. Sometimes the last 2 years we didn't, you know. So, but it's just like a little bit all over the place where we get our fan base from.
Winning is attractive and drama is attractive. And so, yeah, you guys are doing well right now, especially if it's still following you around. And so you don't watch yourself. That's clear. So, I, you know, sorry that Ailish and I have informed you that you're one of the bigger stars of this show. Like, I says, we don't want to change anything, but that is a fact. You were with Red Bull from 05 to 08. You and Christian Horner working side by side. Does it surprise you at all that he does love the cameras and that he seems to be very much enjoying the way that things are going for his team, especially in contrast to his friend Toto?
Yeah, no. I mean, I know Christian a long time. So it's like, and they are a very strong team. You know, they have been the last 15 years a very strong team. So it's and last year, for sure, that was the perfect scenario for the two of them, because the two teams are fighting hard for the championship and they took it to the last race. So obviously, that would need to be captured in any documentary about the season. So, no, I'm not surprised of both of them, knowing them, both of them very well.
Gunther, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. Best of luck with the rest of the season, especially this weekend in Melbourne with the Australian Grand Prix. We're rooting for you guys.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me. Thank you.
Gunther Steiner, team principal of Haas F1. Again, Sunday, Melbourne, Australian Grand Prix. Sunday? So, it might be Saturday with our hours, right? It's a weird
this
one.
This is, I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't think about it until the weekend. Maybe it's something that I should have prepped for. I didn't know we were going to promote it because, you know, might not be on our network. But either way, like what I'm
It's at 1 a.m. Saturday night / Sunday morning.
Oh, right? Perfect.
That's great. That's still actually... That's a fantastic time slot. I got to tell you, I'm really into that. So this is obviously a Haas show now. Like, there's just no question about it. I know the two of you are joining me. I was already on Team Haas. I welcome the two of you. Welcome to it. Daniele can stay on Team Ferrari because he was born and raised. So it's a situation where we're not going to force his hand. We're not going to make him come along with the team. But if he wants to, the door's always open, Daniele. Like, door's always open for you to join Haas.
Just like the Italian World Cup fans joining,
yes,
Canada.
Yes,
World
exactly,
Cup fans.
Exactly. Well, except for those board. Ferrari and Team Italy seem to be trending in different directions when it comes to soccer and F1. But what I was going to say is, what I think is working so well too with this series, and he really outlined it in that interview, which is that it shows you everything. They really open up the books to fans, and yeah, there are different. Advantages a sport like that has, certainly, right? Like, they embrace the drama. It's such a ingrained part of the sport. It's not a team sport in the same way a basketball team is, right? Like, when you get a leak about James Harden and having a clash with Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant, it can truly derail a season. Look at what happened with Ben Simmons. It results in a trade, right? You can't have the same unfettered access to every single little detail the way you can with a team like that, where there is so much more control with the actual car than the actual team dynamic. However, it's still running counter to so much of the way that North American sports are being covered and the way that they're treating fans. F1 is treating fans with an incredible amount of respect and an incredible amount of transparency, and basically just saying, here's our product and here's everything about it. Here's our personalities. Here's everything about them. We're going to go into this fearlessly, and it is working. And it's unbelievable how people are gravitating towards this. Like, sorry, but F1 is not as aesthetically as pleasing a sport as others. Like, it's not hockey or it's not basketball as a television product where you're watching the world's best athletes go head to head. But what they have done is storytelling, and it is a reminder that these things that we watch and that we invest in, the stories are so unbelievably important. And if we can stop getting the, like, classic PR button-down responses from every organization and the same classic overly produced coverage, that it might actually benefit these leagues in the long term, that stuff like fixing baseball might not just be about the pitch clock, it might be about the way we cover these things.
Not might, it is straight up that's the way it is. Yeah. But that requires a level of openness and honestly, like, vulnerability as a sports franchise. It's why the Raptors fans love the Open Gym series so much, or we talked about the Amazon Prime series for days, even though, in my opinion, the Amazon Prime one with the Leafs wasn't that good or that interesting. It's because we don't get that level of access all the time. Here's one thing
Tavares would have played lacrosse, though, if he wasn't a hockey player. We found that out.
Here's what F1 needs to do, though, is they need to make the races weekly so that I don't make the mistake of teeing up an Australian Grand Prix that isn't until next weekend.
Because the first two races
were 1 week apart. I'm like, oh, this is sweet. Every Sunday morning, I'm going to have a race. The next couple are spread out every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm an idiot. Australian Grand Prix, Sunday, April 10th, or Saturday, April 9th, very late at night, if you prefer.
Shows that a lot of people were listening to this interview, though, because we got quite a few texts about it. Thanks to our loyal F1 fan base for being involved. And I just saw that we're talking about the storytelling of sports. Netflix just announced that they're going to be doing a very similar situation with a Drive to Survive, but with the Tour de France. So, I mean, they're looking for places that are a little bit obscure, a little bit of different storytelling in sports that are less covered. They just announced that they're going to be doing one, Tour de France. Don't know how compelling that will be, but I was never a fan of F1, and now I am. So good luck to them to capture my attention again.
Are they going to show all the drugs those guys do? Like, is that series is basically
it could be compelling.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this is how you do blood doping. We're going to see it up close and personal as to how these guys do this.
So that was a great interview. Gunther is awesome. Great.
Let's get a second to clap for Daniele.
Yeah.
Woo, Daniele. Keep them coming, D.
Yeah. Great get by our producer, Daniele. So that is not this weekend. That's next weekend. What's tonight, though, is Leafs-Jets at 7 p.m. We've also got Blue Jays spring training baseball on the Sportsnet Network. And the Jays have Alec Manoah on the hill and are starting eight of their projected nine opening day starters. It's sunny outside. It's a good afternoon to throw that Jays game on wherever you watch your baseball.
The Manoans are back.
Manoans.
This is the thing that I have to bring you guys in on, but I coined Manoah's fan club, and he even referenced it after his first debut. The Manoans were allowed tonight. We got it. The Manoans are back. It starts tonight. We're hungry, and we want it. Let's do this. Jay season, it's close. We're right around the corner. Like, we've had such a packed schedule, and Blue Jays spring training has been sneaky boring because of the 28-man roster, which takes away basically every competitive storyline that you have because Greg Bird makes the team. But it's going to be a wild week next week when we actually have F1. It's the Fan Morning Show. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. Do all those nice things. Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus. We'll catch you tomorrow.